and welcome to Play Better Games, Damn It. This is the Misdirected Mark panel, and we're at the QCC 2017. We have a live studio audience, which is strange because there's not that many people at this convention, so it's really cool that like 3% of the convention decided to show up for us. Thank you all. Clap. Woo! Give yourselves a hand. That's my proof that people are actually sitting here. We're going to introduce ourselves real quick and tell you who we are for those people who are actually listening to this at home. Would you please start, lovely lady to my left?
I am Angela Murray. I'm the host of the Gnomecast.
You are, in fact, the host of the Gnomecast.
Questioningly, she says.
She's still amazed that I was like, you should just go do it and I'll just stop and be out of the way.
Yeah, it's one of Chris's tricks people into doing stuff.
Just wait till he says he's going to stop editing.
No, it's well, if she keeps making 30-minute episodes, I might have to find somebody else. My name is Chris Snezak. I am, I guess, the architect of Misdirected Mark Productions. I put all this stuff together. I am very happy to be here sitting with all a number of my friends and fellow podcasters. This kind of stuff makes me really happy. To my right is the Queenie. Introduce yourself.
Hi, everybody. I am Senda Leno. I am the host, co-host of Pandas Talking Games, and I also do She's a Super Geek on the RPG Academy Network. Moment. And
hey, when are you coming over? I keep hearing a rumor.
I like how she says she's the co-host of Pandas Talking Games, and I also do. She's a super.
And I also do the one that I'm wearing.
It's really the other way around.
Sorry. What else do I say about myself? And I help you run the Misdirected Mark Network.
You, in fact, do. You're way better at social media than me.
Right. So when they think they're talking to you on Twitter, they're really talking to me sometimes.
I feel like they're starting to figure out that it's not me. Like, there's a level of caps lock in tweets that indicates that it's not Chris.
It's a dead giveaway. Good.
And I'm Phil. Phil Vecchione, co-host of Misdirected Mark, co-host of Pandas Talking Games, occasional panel guest on Gnomecast.
That's true.
Well, aren't we all?
Yeah, I think so.
As many of you as I can get.
Bob hasn't been on
Bob
Gnomecast
hasn't been
yet.
On the Gnomecast.
Yeah, Bob hasn't been on the Gnomecast yet. He should probably be on the Gnomecast.
Yeah. I actually need to. Yeah.
And that guy.
I'm Lieutenant Sam Weinberg, and I have no responsibility here whatsoever.
That's about right.
Yeah, Senator. That was a quote from a movie called.
Damn it!
Pop splaining, mark it off your bingo board.
Good Man is a movie from the 1980s.
No, I didn't bring it. I'm sorry, I should have.
Okay, in all seriousness.
And they're sitting in my filing cabinet. Eric Simon is sitting in the audience. He should have reminded me.
Like, I slept at all.
Sleep is for the weak. I am Bob Everson. I am also known as Old Man Logan, or the Eyes of Encoded Designs. And co-host of Misdirected Mark, and yeah.
Okay, so this is called Play Better Games, Damn It, for a reason, and that is because we like to talk about playing better games. Damn it! And Phil, would you please definition Panda up and tell us what that actually means?
Yeah, so it doesn't actually mean that there are better games than others. It means that there are better games for you than other games. And a lot of people sometimes fall into the rut of, well, I know how to play this game. I'm just going to keep playing this, even though it isn't quite what I want, but I'm going to keep just trying to do stuff with it to make it be the thing I really want. And that was okay when Bob was a teenager and I was younger, and there weren't actually that many games out there, But now there are actually plenty of games, and so we actually don't have to just be beholden to a game or a few games. We can go out and find games that actually fit the things that we want to do with them.
Phil, I'm confused. When Bob was a teenager, you weren't actually alive.
I'm not as young as I look.
So when they flipped the lights on, you were actually around too? Weird.
Yeah.
Okay, just checking.
I mean, there was a TV. It was black and white.
Man, black and white TVs. Who's around for black and white TVs? Show of hands in the audience.
Oh, yeah.
I remember them.
I mean, that's not fair. Mike and Tom Flanagan, they're like...
Those guys are Old Man Logan.
You guys know three channels and you had to get up and change them yourself.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's what you had...
Young Man Logan.
That's what you had kids for.
What,
get up,
how about rotary phones, though?
Oh, yeah, show of hands. Who had a rotary phone in their house?
Oh, yeah, man.
All right, cool.
My grandmother had one.
There's young Thomas Flanagan. He has no idea what we're talking about. It doesn't make any sense to him.
Phone had a cord. It used to sit on a wall.
Yep. No, rotary with the...
Yeah, but it had a cord. You had to, like, you know, pick
yeah,
it up.
Yeah, but with the...
All right. With the rotary.
All right, to get back to the topic at hand, we're actually going to talk about how to find the right game for you, at least at first. And then we'll open up the questions so that Eric can ask me something ridiculous that I won't actually be able to answer, because he does that sometimes on the internet. And I'm like, I have to do overdue research. Damn it. So... Senda, when you're thinking about playing better games and finding the right game for you, how do you go about doing that?
Kagegami High. What, I mean,
No, let's go with that. Like, what does Kagegami High mean to you?
She's a little obsessed.
Hey, man, I love Night Vale also.
This is the newest game that I'm really into. So the things that I know that I personally like in a game that I run, and this is different for me, than necessarily in games that I play, right? Although it has some overlap, it's not necessarily the same criteria. One of the things that I really like in a game when I'm going to run it is I don't want to have to prep it.
Prep is for the weak?
Prep is for the weak.
Phil is shaking his head.
Yeah. We have to narrate these things.
You can be lazy about it. It's fine.
It's not
wow.
lazy.
Wow. That's brutal.
It's good use of my time. I don't like having to prep a lot. I really like having a lot of GM tools to help me run the game at the table. So I kind of like having the game create a sandbox for me to play in. I don't like sitting down with no prep at a table and being like, we could do anything. I like having... some boundaries so that I can work within a specific expectation, because I find that is a much better way to handle creativity, is because it has some sort of limits, so it's not overwhelming. Let's see. No prep, creativity, and boundaries. What else do I like about games? The other thing that, in particular for Kagegami High, is working really well for me right now is that I really like running games. I really like running games that I know the tropes for really well. So when we talk about Kagegami High, it's basically Azumanga Daioh meets Night Vale, and it's amazing.
For anybody who didn't understand the words that just came out of her mouth, I'm not going to explain it. You should just go and look it up.
Can I pop-splain Azumanga Daioh?
I can't. Yeah, pop-splain it. Pop-splain it.
It's really good. So Azumanga Daioh is this adorable... is it high school or junior high? I don't remember. Is it high school?
It's technically high school.
High school, yes, yeah. Because they do the exams to go to college. But, so it's this, but there's the little, with the, anyway. Good, these visual gags are great, you guys.
You did a great job so far.
Words are going to keep coming out of my mouth any moment now. This is why I edit my show. I know you don't edit yours, so this is all going to go out to the world. Anyway.
I mean, I should edit it because Phil's on it, but whatever. It's cool. I get it.
So Azumanga Daioh is an anime, a very sweet, adorable, funny little anime about, like, this clique of, like, five sort of outcast/misfit girls in high school and just what their, like, high school life is like. And it is... amazing and brilliant and funny and sweet and has some of that slice of life stuff going on, but is also a little bit crazy, fantasy, surreal sometimes. And it is fantastic. And so when you merge that kind of slice of life, but kind of funny, upbeat, cute, we're all friends and we support each other. And so the story and point of this is how we can all be friends and like have those moments together and create that time together. And then you smoosh some Night Vale weird right in on top of that. It's amazing. It's a really good game. I don't even remember where I was. In terms of reasons that I would pick that game.
I'm not sure I know you.
Are you guys all following that?
I think so. Maybe.
I can keep following it.
The point
genre,
is...
the tropes. When I know the tropes really well, it makes it very easy for me to run it without prepping it. That's not a requirement for me playing a game. I can fuck it.
We're explicit. You have
been. Thank you, Bob.
I can futz is what I'm going for.
He's not going to edit this.
I know he's not going to edit this. This is why I edit.
As well just
reminding everyone. Okay, fuck.
You want to say it one more time just to feel better?
No, fuck you.
Okay, it's fair.
So I guess that's what I look for in a game is basically the key components of how I like to run a game are not having to prep it so much, having some bounds for the creativity so I know what kind of story I'm creating so that I don't have to prep it, and then it being a genre and tropes that I'm very familiar with.
So you have a list.
I have a list.
I mean, I've heard about these magical lists before, especially when it comes to, like, because I find that games are like relationships. Like, you should have a list of things that you enjoy in a partner uh-huh. that you want to spend a lot of time with. So, I mean...
Sure. I've never done that with a relationship.
Phil, you're asking the girl who's like the one-shot queen
uh-huh. yeah, I know.
Relationship.
It's temporary!
Oh. The list is like short. Oh my God. Able to play it once. Wow. Check.
Are we talking about games or relationships?
Games.
Games, really.
Stay on games.
You're not wrong. Like, what is the difference sometimes, I suppose? So, Phil, what's your list then?
Mine's actually somewhere close to Senda's. For me, genre's everything. So I look for games that emulate particular genres. And in as much that when I want to play a game, I want to play a certain genre and I want to tell a certain kind of story. But the mechanics of that game have to support that genre. So it's not enough for me to play 5e with some Cthulian elements because there aren't any specific rules that from 5e that, you know, play into the tropes of a Cthulian horror game. So that's not enough genre emulation for me. What I need is a game that's built for a particular genre. So something like Knights Black Agents, where everything in Knights Black Agents drives you towards that, you know, Jason Bourne versus vampires. Blades in the Dark, which is that underworld, you know, gang rivalry competition thing, and everything kind of drives towards it. Velvet Glove, Night Witches, like all of those things are not just a really strong genre, but all of them have mechanics that pull right into that genre. And so for me, because I like to play games and I like to learn systems, but I want to learn systems that are supporting that genre. So I will find a game and I'll be like, oh, that genre looks really interesting. And then I'll pour through the book because then I'm like, what mechanics in this game actually make that happen? Because I know I can make it happen at the table, but that's not interesting for me. Like, I know I could take, you know, I know I can take any generic system and run it in whatever genre I want. What I really want is a game that has those mechanics. So that for me is like the number one thing. After that, I don't care whether it's no prep or full prep. I can do both. I don't care. Hey, I'm going to say it now, and I'll just put it on the table, that you can only get so much story from an emergent game.
Yeah, but I run one shots. That's like all that I run. Like, why should I sit down and spend?
I'm just saying a certain level of campaign development, a certain amount of story presented comes from prep that doesn't come out of.
Think so?
Which call emergent games?
I don't know. Go ahead.
I think Phil's got a point there. If you're running a campaign, even if you're running it in a system that encourages that emergent play and the narrative, you know, passing the narrative around to the players, you still need to have some planning if you're going to have, you know, a second, a third, a fourth session. Even if it's just thinking about what's going on in the background, what's going on with the NPCs, and, you know, if you want to give your players a, you know, be able to walk away from that game with a story, you know, you have to have some planning in there to basically remain consistent from session to session. You know, it's like, sure, I can run a great one-shot, and I love running one-shots of stuff that just comes from what the players give me.
You can hear Ange doing that on my latest episode of She's a Super Geek.
Which you should listen to.
It was amazing.
It's the first episode is all the players doing all the work, though. Me just, like, nudging in certain directions.
But I'm with you, Ange. I mean, I think certain games support emergent play better than others. I mean, yeah. Knights Black Agents, you can play it emergent, but I think it goes way better if you actually craft a whole mystery and conspiracy.
Well, that game functions best if you build out the conspiracy, right? Like, if you have a good chunk of that together. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, we played Dungeon World for a couple of years, and, I mean, I did some prep. I guess maybe there's a difference between no prep, super light prep, and actual prep.
Yeah.
Because, like, how do you explain that then?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of Dungeon World was emergent. I mean, it was. I mean, the actual plot line of Dungeon World was there was, you know, without giving it away, because I think this is going to be a product one day. But
maybe.
But I mean, I get what you're saying. You had points along a timeline.
Uh-huh.
Pretty far stretched apart.
That is accurate.
And then emergent stuff in the middle. And there's nothing wrong with that. I've done all of those, and so have you.
I think
you've done fully scripted campaigns.
I have.
I think the key with prep, though, is you have to be willing to just toss it aside.
Yeah.
If the players are going in a different direction, don't just corral them back into what you already have planned, because they're already having fun with what they're doing. You know, so it's like stay consistent, you know, keep, you know, do enough planning so that you can maintain those story elements. But
I mean, what Chris wound up doing in Airy Peaks was he had
the Mad Wizard Merwin has walked into the room.
Yes.
Everybody be quavering and be afraid. Just say hi, Sean.
Do you need me to do something?
Hi, Sean.
Thank you, Sean. You can leave now. You don't need to be here anymore.
Poof. Oh, look at that. He disappeared in a cloud of smoke.
It's so clever.
Right.
He's a wizard.
What Chris wound up doing was he set some far points on a timeline that was the story and then stayed flexible enough in the emergent part to take the stuff that came up and sculpt it either into the story or alter the story to follow the emergent path. But even you got caught.
A mistake.
Yeah, you got caught off guard with emergent play. You on the fly made a decision. You brought it up in the game. You gave the players a decision of whether to stay in the dungeon, which is the main focal point of the adventure, or go completely to another kingdom, which is nowhere in anything that we had ever done. And we turned around and went to the kingdom.
Yeah, and it almost killed the game.
And almost killed the game. We actually had to stop. And then we decided after we took a break, like, you guys are all back and you're in the...
I highly respect that you were able to recover from that, because I had a campaign where the players were like, took the ideas in a different direction than I expected, and I completely flaked on that campaign. They're like, oh, but if this happened and that happened, this means that happened, and I'm like... Oh my God, they're right, and I don't want to run that game, and I completely flaked.
I think the good part for us in that was that as the whole table, we were like, oh, we went in the wrong direction. Like, we all just admitted, like, after two or three sessions, we were like, oh, this isn't what we're supposed to be doing.
We should really go back and do the other thing now.
Yeah, so we were like, how can we just fast forward that? And Chris came up with a couple of moves, made some custom moves to allow us to kind of resolve what had happened and put us right back in the dungeon.
Now, audience, would you like us to break down actually how we did that, like, in a step-by-step process and actually hear the inside of what happened there? Or, like, as far as, like, a procedural way that you can actually do that yourselves? Or would you like us to move on to something else? Show of hands. Cool. Nobody wants to hear that story.
You didn't tell them which thing they were raising their hands for.
Raise your hands if you want us to do that. Cool. Nobody actually wants us to do that.
One thing real quick, though, because all of that was right with the discussion of Chris's Airy Peaks campaign and emergent play and the amount of prep. But stop and think about it, Chris, because what you also did in addition to prepping as you were going, you laid out the foundation of the Airy Peaks beforehand, which obviously is prep. And it wasn't a huge amount, but you set a baseline before we got started of this is where we are, this is what it looks like, this is how it behaves, and now we're going to put characters in there, we're going to do our thing, and we're going to play to see what happens. But you did lay that baseline too.
It's
so
true.
That's another form of prep that you did for the game.
Yeah, I call it foundational prep. Yeah. I prep for 4 hours and then I run a game for 50.
Like, yes.
That's the idea. That way I can get my my prep to play ratio where I want it.
Well, and you also played a game that supported
that
ratio
that is true.
Of prep.
Yeah, it didn't work very well for me when I was running 4th edition. AKA those books I never read.
Yeah, I had to.
But I did run that game and I did prep like that for it.
Yeah, I did a lot of prep for my 4th edition game. But let's talk about something else. We were talking about playing better games. There's the list is really the thing to me. Like, know your list. And if you know your list, then you can find the games that work for you. And if you know your group's list, then you can find the games that work for your group. Does anybody here disagree with me about that?
No, or just, you know, get a different group.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, too.
Oh, yeah, I think that in and of itself is a whole other aspect to play better games, damn it. Find the right people to play with.
Find the right people to play with. How do you do that?
Conventions
is a good way to do that, I think so.
Understand what you want out of a fellow group and cultivate that. Like, in my game group, I was not a GM until TJ was like, so when are you going to run a game? And he was in, I'm like, I don't run games. I can't run a game. I've been playing games for almost 20 years, but I can't run a game. How could I possibly GM anything? And he's like, no. When are you going to run a game? Of course you can run a game. Run a game. And like, he pushed at me for 2 years until I decided to, okay, I will run a game now. And like, that is him cultivating the group that he wants to keep around himself. You know, he made sure that he has other people to GM because he likes to play as much as he likes to GM. So, I mean, it's like you know what you want in the people around you and cultivate that. And don't put up with the assholes.
Seriously.
Just tell them to go away. It's okay. I mean, playing games is our recreation time. You don't have to have not fun with your games.
I work with some younger folk who I listen to them talk about their gaming groups, and it's like, why would you put up with somebody like that?
Yeah.
Just because you've been friends with them for a while doesn't mean you have to game with them.
At every one of those groups.
Yeah.
At every one of those players.
It's
tough, though. We say that pretty simply, like, just get rid of them, but the reality of just getting rid of people in a gaming group is actually harder.
It really is.
Can be quite brutal.
Yeah,
you guys should talk. I'm the one who kept playing games with people I'd been in relationships with and had subsequently not been in a relationship with.
You were also
like
19 or 20. That wasn't, you know, some of your best judgment.
No.
Bob and I were like in our 30s and 40s, 50s if you're Bob.
80s. Yeah. Hundreds.
And we're still doing that.
Yeah.
So, well, I think the older you get, the less bullshit you're willing to put up with.
You know,
yes.
You know, so it's you reach the point where it's like, I don't have time for that type of person to be in my game.
Yeah, our time gets more limited, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I realized it when I was going through, I had the wrong group because I burned through something like 6 games in 3 months.
I remember
like,
that.
I couldn't find a game that would stick with that group, and I was like, I first was like, oh, I just have to find the right system that'll stick. And then after a while, I was like, nope, I need to find the right group. Like, nothing I want to run. It finally came down to, here's the list of things I want to run. And the group's like, here's the list of things we want you to run. And I'm like, there is zero overlap on these lists. Like, you are not looking for me to run a game. Like all what you really want is you just, like, I mean, ultimately what it came down to is they were Pathfinder. They were hardcore
Murder
Pathfinder
hobos.
Players. They wanted super crunchy character build stuff, and I was like, I want super light playbook built, story driven style games. And I was like, look, the thing that you're really enjoying is that I'm consistent and show up to the game prepared. Like, you're not enjoying anything that I'm bringing or anything I want to play. And eventually, that group folded. Bob and I like fled that group.
So what's the then I'm going to open up to questions from the audience because I'm sure they want to ask us stuff. And if they don't, then, you know,
then they're going to.
They're
going to
ramble at us. We're just going to keep rambling.
Close the doors, Bob. Nobody gets out without a question.
What is the best way to one, cultivate a group, and then two, if you have players in your group that you don't like, get them out of your group gracefully? Oof. I mean, personally for me, I just like being honest with people. I'm like, this is, and I try to pick people that I think will fit into games really well, which is how our Airy Peaks group got built. But when I have people in the group that I am not super satisfied with, I often do the thing where I'm like, well, we're not playing that game anymore. And then I just wait a couple weeks and build a different group. And that's not really the best way to do it. I think sometimes just being honest with people is the best way to do it. Be like, look, this just doesn't really work for us. And if there's hard feelings, I'm sorry, but I would prefer not to play, not to have you here because it's ruining the fun for everybody else. And only if that's actually the case. And if it's me that's causing the problem, I try to, like, get myself out of the way. So what about you, Andrew?
Well, I haven't had to kick anyone out of my main group in ever. we had an incident where somebody in the group wanted to invite somebody into the group without checking with everyone, and that caused some problems because the person she wanted to invite was not somebody I was interested in gaming with regularly, and that caused some friction. And she ended up leaving the group after that. But that was, her interests were waning anyway, so she just, after that confrontation, she left, and we didn't have to worry about that person I didn't want in the group joining us. And we've got a really solid regular group right now, so I haven't had to deal with that in a very long time. What I've dealt with a little more frequently is the extended like gaming group where I get together with people on you know semi-regular occasions, whether it's a con or a gaming weekend or a, you know, I need to play test this, come to my house. It's random games like that. It's like you learn, you know, if you don't want to game with that person, don't invite them. You know, I have friends who have a gaming weekend at their house, and we dealt with the, I can't remember which geek fallacy it is, but the, you know, you don't want to be exclusionary. Well, yes, you do. If there is somebody who is unpleasant to game with, don't invite them. You don't have to invite somebody and be polite. You know, it's we as geeks, we tend to be that. Well, we don't want to exclude anyone. We don't want to you know, ostracize anybody. But at the same time, you also need to protect your own social enjoyment and you know, and the people around you. So don't invite the people you don't like. I mean, that's the simplest way I can put it.
Does anybody have anything else to add that would make this, that are different points, or should we move on?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I can just add a quick thing. I do the test drive, 4 sessions. So whether it's a new player or a new game, I run 4 sessions and then decide whether or not it's going to go. And that's also my opt-out. So if I want to do the dump and you know, rebuild thing, it's like, well, we're going to try this game out. We're going to play 4 sessions. Because in 4 sessions, I should know whether or not I like GMing it, whether this group works for playing it, and whether this game actually works or not. Because you'll never figure... I mean, you get bad sampling errors in one... Like, if you try it the first time and it's clunky. Like, if I had tried Blades only once, I would have thrown that book out and rather than actually digging in and actually trying to master that game. So, 4 sessions, dump it and go. But I'll do that to players, too. Like... 4 sessions. I don't expect somebody to gel the first time they sit down at the table. So I need them, you know, I need to give them a fair shake too. So even if it's painful, 4 sessions, and then I'll decide whether or not this game is going to exist in a, you know, beyond that.
But thank you, Rach and Eric, for closing the doors. Yes. I appreciate it.
Like at the same time, like sprung into that. Yeah. It was amazing.
Like, it was like tag.
Bam,
it was like,
and then they timed it, and then they pulled them shut.
So good. I just want one more thing. This is really clever if you have the time and the people to do it. We have a casual Sunday kind of morning story game Sunday thing, and that has been a great way to like sort of add people to the group if you can, because we play on Sunday. We have a couple of groups on Sunday nights too. We alternate every other week. That has been a really good way to audition people. That's how we got our friend Glenn, who's around, who's an excellent role player, and we love mm-hmm. playing games with him.
Yeah, we took him on Sunday mornings, and we didn't even play at anyone's house in the beginning. We just played at Panera. We were like, hey, we're going to go to Panera and just play story games for the morning. In fact, we started with swords.
That way you don't have to invite strangers into your house.
I say that because Rach is here, and it's Rob and Rach who taught me how to play swords. So.
All right, let's open this sucker up for some questions. Who wants to ask us anything about anything? Go ahead.
What's your biggest misstep in terms of guessing a game that would be good for your group?
Or for yourself.
No, I'm perfect. I've never done it wrong.
No. Oh, God.
For me...
I just need to think about it.
For me, I thought...
You doubt the queen?
You doubt the queen? Let me put these panda ears back on.
I know one of yours, Chris, is.
What is it?
So one of yours was our Numenera game.
That game was going really well.
Yes, but you built the player component.
Yeah.
So that it could... You built a story around the players. So here's what Chris did. And this is only a misstep... Because the way it unfolded. So he did this thing where he bonded all the characters together by putting these nanites in them, and if they got too far apart, they would die. So they had to, like,
sure
stay together.
Sure is Numenera. Okay.
But then one of the players had a family emergency that took them out of the game.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't have a way... I mean, we could have. Like, we could have... We could have... Like, we could have... come up with some way that the nanites broke down or something that was like completely against everything that we had built around the story. But we didn't know he was going to be gone for a while. So he temporarily dropped out and we were like, oh, we can't play.
And then we played the Airy Peaks.
Right, and then we started playing Dungeon World. But it was one of those things where we built a thing around all players need to be at the table. And then one of the players wasn't around the table. Like, totally got, it was a totally got you kind of. It seemed like the right idea at the time, but.
For me, like, you're not wrong about that. For me, Blades in the Dark is a game that I am fascinated by infinitely, but and I hate playing it.
I wish
I liked it. I want to like that game. It's got such cool stuff in it. But I don't play in that game anymore, and there's some other things that kind of surrounded that, but really it's just that game frustrates me to no end because I think there's only really one intelligent way to play it, and I don't like that.
So what's really funny to me about that is they were like, yeah, I don't think Chris should play this game. And then you were like, yeah, I'm going to play this game.
Dude, it's a heist game. It's a heist and job game. Like, I love playing Leverage, and I love playing heist games.
Yeah,
like,
but here's the difference, and this is the reason why we had originally told you not to play this game, is that you're not good people in Blades in the Dark. In Leverage, you're good people. In Blades in the Dark, you're bad people. Yeah. Now, you can play Blue Coats. Well, even Blue Coats isn't actually... even Blue Coats isn't that good. Actually, I think it's Sean Nittner's Vigilante book, and I forget what he calls it, but Sean Nittner wrote a set of playbooks for Blades where you play vigilantes.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And your jobs are to like go and take out criminals.
You can, that
but the actual default game is you're bad criminals like working your way up the underworld.
Yeah. Now I actually didn't have a problem with that. I bought into the concept. I was doing the whole thing, but man, I had so many issues with how that game works mechanically. It was driving me nuts.
It was driving all of us.
Some of it was I didn't understand, but when I even started to understand, I'm like, I don't really like the cycle of play in this, and I don't think it really is. It doesn't really work for me, and that's fine. Like, I think that game is awesome. I can't wait to steal a whole bunch of stuff from it, but it just wasn't for me, and I mean, mm-hmm. maybe someday I'll play it again, but when I have a little bit more distance from it.
And one thing that's important to note about that is that as a player, you identified the fact that the game wasn't working for you, and rather than stick around because you wanted to play with those people at the table and suffer through a game that you weren't enjoying, thereby causing the rest of the table to come down. By the fact that they could tell that you didn't like it, you walked out.
I was doing that. I'm pretty sure the last session of Blade you had was probably one of the best sessions of Blade you had, and I wasn't there, and that's okay.
Yeah. But you identified that it wasn't working, and rather than stick around and cause more trouble, you said, "No, I should probably not be playing this game." And you walked away.
I didn't want to ruin. I didn't want to ruin the game.
Yeah.
But on your list, like you need, like you have this habit of it. This is actually on your list, but you often ignore it. You do not like playing bad people.
It's true. And I was like, playing a serial beater for the most part.
You played in my cartel game.
That was brutal.
And that was a challenge for you. Like, I like running dark and brutal games. Like, that's kind of like if Senda likes to run like happy, fun, crazy games, I like to run like gritty, horrible crime dramas with like bodies in trunks and, you know, things like that. Like, I, you know, across genres. That's why Blades appeals to me, Cartel appeals to me. But that's a hard one for you. You don't actually like playing bad people.
I'm with Chris on that one. I like playing thieves and troublemakers with hearts of gold.
Yeah, I don't mind that.
Qualities.
Yeah. I don't mind that, but I also don't. You know, I have zero problem with somebody who's driving around in a car with a trunk lined with garbage bags, just in case they gotta put a person in it. That's legit.
You're scary, Phil.
I seem to remember a fiasco game where someone ended up on fire and it was your fault, but anyway.
People always end up on fire in fiasco games.
Do they?
Sometimes naked.
I put her in the flammable suit.
You put her in the flammable suit. I seem to remember just poisoning a zoo full of...
Pandas
with bunny ears.
Yeah. But yeah, that's... I mean,
what is wrong with you people?
Fiasco. It's just fiasco.
Fiascos, everyone, all safeties are off for fiasco. As long as you get the trust at the table, all safeties are off.
Oof.
What about you, Senda?
What was the question? I was talking about pandas.
Biggest misstep.
Thank you.
Biggest misstep. So actually, I think my biggest misstep was actually that 4th edition game that I was just talking about. I ended up running a campaign in 4th edition, which is a system that I still have never read the books for.
Every time I hear that story, my heart, I die a little inside. I'm like, how did you do that? Like,
she keeps saying, I ran a fourth edition game. What she did was she ran a D&D game.
I ran a D&D game, and Emily filled me in on the details of the fourth edition specific rules.
Sure. I actually, the first time I ran Monster of the Week, I almost did the same thing. I kind of sort of skimmed the book and just went to the table with, I like this genre.
Sure, yeah.
And luckily, one of the players at my table for that con game was one of my friends who knows the game, and he was able to gently nudge me in the right direction with the rules.
It was really funny, because if you talk to Emily now, she was always like, I didn't understand why you kept deferring to me on rulings. And I was like, well, because I didn't know the rules. So I was just like, this is a D20 system. I can run D20. I don't know. How does that move work, Emily?
What do you think, Emily? Is that a reflex save?
I mean, that was her first RPG. Like, she's super knows that game inside and out. And I was like, I don't need to know this stuff. Whatever, it's D20. But so the thing that ended up happening with that game, it had two parts. There was a social component in terms of how it started and stuff. And it started out great because Emily was running it, and she's really good at these cool, like, political games, which is, she's like, I love running D&D, and I'm like, I don't think this is actually the game you're looking for. I think it's just how you run it. But I mean, it's great. She runs a good game, an amazing game. I love her games.
Even Avanti, I agree. There's been some D&D, but we're like in the middle of a political shitstorm right now.
That is how Emily runs D&D. It's amazing. I mean, you won't necessarily see combat, and I don't even care. But the thing about that game is D&D is not actually the game that I like running, and I didn't know that at the time because I hadn't played anything else yet. There was a social component in which we kind of accidentally did the thing. We're like, oh, well, I don't know. We're all busy now, so we're not going to meet on that night anymore, and we're going to tell these people but not those people. But what ended up happening is I was at a place where I was really anxious to start experimenting with the kind of games that I do actually like now. And so we're in the middle of this fourth edition campaign. I don't even know the rules. And I'm like, whatever. Like, this isn't really speaking to me. I'm really enjoying running this. I really like kind of the, now I would call them fronts, but, you know, the stuff that I knew was going on in the world that I was very excited about. But I was like, this system is not really hitting it for me. We actually ended up taking that game and turning it into a fate game.
As you do.
Like you do. And at that point, I was like, okay, this is great. Even though I didn't super grok fate at the time, because it was the first fate game I'd ever run. But that really made it for me. So I think actually my biggest misstep was attempting to run 4th edition D&D. Yeah, long story short.
As Sean P. Kelly would say, Angela, what about you? If you don't know, that's a Gaming ABS reference.
Yeah, my biggest missteps bringing games to players are a few years old at this point, and it was more not having an understanding of the game. It had nothing to do with the system. It had everything to do with what was the game I wanted to run. The one I talked about earlier where my players went, oh, if X, Y, and Z, then this is what's going to happen next, was a superheroes game. And I wanted to do a very low-power, heroes-esque, you know, heroes don't exist in the world. You know, there's no tights, there's no capes, but these people have superpowers. And I set this up by saying that there was this flu epidemic that happened. And, you know, all the PCs developed. Yeah, Chris was in that game. Not Chris Nizak, Chris who's in the audience. And
better Chris.
Other Chris?
Other Chris.
I want better, it's fine.
Well, anyway, it was an epidemic of this flu that went around, and about a month after they recovered from the flu, they started developing their superpowers. And all the players were really, really getting into the game, but my players are far smarter than I am. And they started doing a little bit of the epidemiology, and they're like, oh, wow, if this is the number of people that got infected and this is the number of people that are actually going to, you know, manifest powers, this country's going to fall apart in about 6 months. We better start preparing. And I was like, that is not the game I wanted to run, and now I don't know what to do.
Can I tell you that my plane got hit by lightning on the way here, and I'm just waiting. I'm waiting for my superpowers.
Yeah, all my players are like, we don't know why that game died, Ange. That was so much fun. We had so much fun. I mean, waffles. It was a thing in the game. And it's just, I was like, I didn't know what to do with it. And so after that was kind of my wake-up call to be like, okay, I need to have a better understanding of what game I'm bringing to the table before I start running a campaign now.
What about you, Bob?
I would have to say I haven't run a game in a long time. It's been, what, like 4 or 5 years since I ran my fourth edition game, which was an awesome time, but...
But GMing's not actually your
gig. GMing's not really my gig. But back in the day, when I would cycle in every once in a while and run a game, I had a plan for a campaign that I thought would be awesome. And the easiest way to explain it is I was telling my story and not letting the players help tell the story.
And I might remember that.
Yeah, that was my D20 Modern After Earth game.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was just, and this is happening, and this is happening, and this is happening. And I made literally every single GM mistake that you can make. I was making players roll for stuff that they shouldn't have had to roll for, and no consequences, and I was telling my story and not letting them drive anything, and it was just
it was also the one where you would come to the table and you'd be like, oh my God, I hardly prepped anything today. I hope we can have some fun. It's like, don't tell us that. just sit down and start running the game. Like,
in my defense, I did that quite a few times when we were playing 4th edition.
Did you run a module?
That
then?
Was, you know, running modules. Yeah. And I had a group that was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And they would just go nuts. And it was a blast.
That was Watsy's fault.
That's Watsy's
fault for making some terrible 4th edition modules.
We're just about out of time because we only got 2 minutes left. So thanks for that question, Rich, because that took the rest of the time. Appreciate it.
You saved everyone else. They are now permitted to leave.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you need people to...
So, no, we don't. I don't need that. That's fine.
Okay.
I don't care.
Yeah, but does the con care?
I guess. I don't know. I think
can't hurt.
That was just to let me know who was supposed to be here. That's supposed to be like the game sheet, I guess.
This is the last 2 minutes you want to use?
Yeah.
Okay, go.
I have a really quick question based on Phil's garbage bag. Trunk.
Okay, so we have a question based on Phil's garbage bag line trunk, which actually exists in reality. That
yes,
it doesn't.
I don't know which one of you thinks they're on the FBI with most.
No, I totally,
yeah, totally
my,
Phil.
My
totally
Knights Black Phil. Agents prep had
yeah,
things had things like, you know, Yugoslavian secret police.
No, wait. No. Tell them the story about calling about the train.
Okay, so when I was in grad school, I was running Conspiracy X game. And I was not one for, like, making up details. And so I was planning this conspiracy where the bad guys, the aliens, had this grain blight. And they were going to, they wanted to, in a very covert way, they wanted to kill America's breadbasket, which means that somewhere in Iowa, they needed to release this grain blight. So I was like, okay, well, the best way to do that is they need to, like, have a train derail and have the blight spill out. So luckily this is 1986 before, you know, everybody gets really twitchy about
four.
These things. Thank you.
That was
no, not
96.
96.
You said you definitely Sorry. Said 1986.
Connex didn't come out until 94.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I'm like, all right, so what will happen is this train will be loaded with a grain blight and it'll travel and it'll derail in Iowa. So I'm like, well, how long does that take? So I'm like, I don't know. So I get out the, I like get on, I think it was a phone book or whatever, and I called a shipping company. And I'm like, listen, if I wanted to rent a tanker to transport liquid and move it from California to Chicago, like how many days does that take? And they're like, well, it takes about 8 days. And I'm like, 8 days. That's like about four. Like four will put it right. But I needed, so the thing is, I needed it consistent because I needed, and this is a prep thing, I needed the players to get on the trail of clues, but I wanted them to stop the train just before it exploded, and I needed to make sure that there was – I started the players at the right time so that it was more like get there in time. Because if I had started them too many days in advance, they'd have just stopped the train in California. That would have been a lot less interesting. I needed it to be like by the time they figured out what was going on, they were like, holy shit, this train is somewhere in, you know, somewhere in the middle of America. We have to go find it. So, yeah, so I called a shipping company and asked them to. So, that one probably, and everything I wrote for Knight's Black Agents. And even worse, when the stuff we did for Dracula Dossier, I spent a month researching CIA black sites to write the American Vampire Program.
Yeah.
And my search history during that month is, I probably should have just used a Tor browser.
He's definitely on the DHS watch list. Yeah,
yeah. I got some bad stuff on that list.
And with that, it is 10:51, and we are done. Angela, where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me anywhere Gnome Stew is on the internet. You can find me usually hanging out in the Misdirected Mark G+ community. You can also find me on the Twitters as myself at Orikes13, O-R-I-K-E-S-13.
You can catch me at all those places, too, and on the Twitters at TheLight101, where you can get your smooth jazz all day long, and at Misdirected Mark. What about you, Sundin? Spell that Twitter handle, please.
Oh, my gosh. The moment you said that, I knew this was coming.
Yeah. Bob, spell that Twitter handle.
Yeah, right.
So you can find me on Twitter at IDELLAMITHLYNND. Oh, see, you know it, too. I feel so loved. So it's Idella Mithland. You can also find me at Pandas Talk Games and at Sasgeek Podcast, and finding me in one of those places is probably a lot easier than spelling my Twitter handle and on Gnome Stew, etc. Phil, where can people find you on the internet?
I just want to say under missteps, maybe your Twitter handle.
That's not a
biggest
game.
RPG misstep.
That's not a game.
Actually, it was your character.
It was my character's name. Yeah, my character's name was actually longer.
Fine character name.
No, my character's name was actually longer than that. I ran out of characters in the Twitter handle. You guys, when you auto-generate elvish names, you get long, weird shit. Why am I the one doing all the cussing today? Anyway, Phil, where can people find you on the internet?
People can find me on the Misdirected Mark Show. They can find me on Pandas Talk Games. You can find me on Gnome Stew, where I have the design journal for Hydra Hackers. And you can find me on G+, as Phil Vecchione. And, of course, you can find me on Twitter, at DNAPhil. Robert?
I am on G+, Bob Everson, and you can find me on Twitters at Robert M. Everson, and the Misdirected Mark podcast, and lurking behind the scenes in the ever-awesome Slack room for life on Slack.
Yes, hashtag chat room for life.
Well, with that, thank you so much, audience, for being here and listening to us ramble for an hour or so about the network and playing better games, damn it. And you all have a wonderful rest of your convention. And everybody out there in listener land, have a great day and play some amazing games.